I loved seeing people knowing songs. There was a guy on the left, probably like in his late 40s, mm-hmm. headbanged hard mm-hmm. our whole set, uh-huh. knew every freaking line. There was a couple guys on the right that knew every song. It's quite an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
There was a couple people, you know, yellow teeth.
That might be our crowd.
It might be a crowd. We might be a meth mom and dad crowd.
Yeah, and that's, you know. It's okay. They got to go to shows too.
They have to be entertained. And if that's who we're entertaining, then so be it.
You're going to have to start writing music to that.
If that's who I have to inspire. Going on. So let me tell you what the deal is. I've been running around like a maniac, doing shows, stuff like that, comedy shows, a lot of comedy shows, trying to get the CD out there more and more, working on next year. There's a lot going down. The band's not around. Mike Tichy is, I don't know, he's rehearsing for whatever show he's got going. I don't know what he's rehearsing for. You know what? And sometimes it's good to do this. Just do this. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. There's life things I want to tell you that's going on. There's band stuff and comedy. I'm sitting in my living room, in my kitchen right now. It's so peaceful. Nobody's here. I'm going to make myself a little cup of coffee. This normally is when I thrash. It's where the song Thrash came from. Moments like this. I'm also starting to realize, you know, there's a lot of entertainers, whatever, and you find your creative, even if you're not an entertainer, you know how you always have a creative time in your life? You're creative. I found out when I'm most creative, when I have freaking coffee. So I'm going to make myself one now and we'll see where this goes. I have a lot of things on the plate. So I'm going to have to really think about some of them. Are no-brainers. And we've done some shows with the band, and I'm very pleased with the results. I also know we have to do a lot more. I'm starting to realize what our strengths are and what the weaknesses are. And if I were to say the strengths are musically, we have it, and that's a major key. The weaknesses are I feed off energy. I feed off energy. When I'm doing stand-up comedy, the louder and the heartier people laugh, the more I create while I'm on the stage. I have a routine, but it becomes more routine. As I'm on stage, it just goes far and wide. Those are the very best shows. You get that one big laugher. You get that group that just is howling, and that feeds me. And forget it. I'm off to the races, and we're out of there. And I don't have that. I just don't have that yet with the band. I just don't have it. And we're holding auditions August 25th. I've had the record label talk to me and the producer talk to me, and they have the same dream. I had a specific eye from when this whole thing started, and I still do. And I find myself trying to, and I'm learning from watching other bands, I find myself trying to cast what I visually see and hear. And for the most part, it's pretty much there. But I've come to terms with it has to be amped up, and it does have to be a certain way. And it may be in, some people may not. Now, during the auditions, I'm hoping to find that personality that wants to be a huge playmate. I don't care how big the ego is and how much fun they have on there, but they got I want a performer and someone I could feed energy off of. And that's becoming, it's not a major issue because I can hold my own. So holding my own is no problem. It'd be nice to know I can turn and there's a guy playing the audience and emphasizing on certain chords and playing to the audience. We don't play the audience. I do. And sometimes that's a key role to a major thing. Now, at the same time, we found some shows in Brooklyn that I think work really well. I introduced the whole band one-on-one. And, you know, my favorite thing that's happened yet, I have to say, I looked at TG and I went, so Mike here is Mellow Mike. He doesn't move. He doesn't make facial expressions. He's like a wedding freaking guy. And the band immediately kicked into a wedding song. It was freaking hilarious. And I loved that they were able to play, just create like that. That is huge. And the audience laughed. And I said, now don't get me wrong. There's going to be times where we're going to be bringing it. We're going to be bringing the music. We rock the house. We rock it. I'm telling you, we destroy. I just got off the phone with my manager. As it's a huge necessity, we're in every freaking festival next year. Everyone. We crush at the festivals. The promoters have said Jim and his band crush. Well, we need to be on every single one next year. So there's more awareness in Europe, Australia, here, every single one. And just mutilate. And so I love that intro we did in Brooklyn. Loved it. And I said, the more he crushes, you're going to notice he doesn't move. He's still Mellow, which, you know, you take the guy from Slipknot, you know, number seven, he wails. He barely moves, but he's got the mask. It's a character. It's a very character. So I find myself, I have to introduce and create characters on the stage, so now you accept them. Because if we just showed up and we played, you'd look and you'd go, what are these? I see Jim. I don't understand. We're not rock band. You know, rock band, the guitarist's foot is up there, the bass player's up standing on a Marshall. It's the guitar guys are out there and they're mouthing lyrics and we just, that part is missing right now. And again, it's not a major issue because I bring it. But I look at it almost the way when Metallica never had a problem. But when, and of course Cliff is the Metallica with James and Lars and Kirk, but what I'm getting at is when you saw Jason Newsted, as when he first was on Metallica, that he was a huge part of that band. He brought a vibrant energy. He brought that audience participation. He brought that. And of course, you know, you're looking at James, you're looking at Lars banging the drums and Kirk at the solos, and the songs is what brought you there. But live, I was always very impressed with Jason. He brought an energy that was very satisfying as a guy sitting in the audience watching this. It was stimulating. I loved it. I'm looking for that guy. I'm hoping I find him. So in the meantime, so I just get off of the management and we're going to search for that. But in the meantime, like, you got to get me on this. We have to do these festivals. Have to do the festivals. So I never told you. I met Corey Taylor from Slipknot. I was so impressed by this guy. Not because of his performance. Not because of the musician is. What a great family. He's a family guy. His wife is managing and looking over everything. He's got kids there. He's got his nephew, cousin, his friend. It was what a, it was really impressive. I love seeing that with bands, just organized. You know, it's fun to be a rock band and tear it up and, you know, the whole persona where it all is. But when you turn, you see you got a machine. Slipknot is a machine. And Corey and his wife are a machine that run a kick-ass rock business. I was highly impressed and blown away. I'm like, wow. And that's why they're so... That's what... You could be a great musician. You could have great songs. You need that machine. You need that organized, well machine. Everyone around you keeping it going. And my hat's off to Slipknot and Corey and his wife and that family, because it was impressive. It was super impressive. And speaking of family, I'm getting texts. Do you know how hard it is being a father of teenage girls, which is why I wrote that song, Raising Teenage Girls? It's not even just being a father of three kids and, you know, I'm going on 50. It's not even that. I'm a negotiator. While I'm in the middle of this, I get my wife sending text messages saying, our oldest daughter wants to see her boyfriend. There's no one at the house. She can't go and thing. And I don't want her doing this. Blah, 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 blah. And then now I get it from the daughter going, can I please do this? And his parents are going to be there. And can I please? Okay, yes. I told her no. Blah, blah, blah. It's a lie. Okay, let me tell you. Then wife calls and she's calling. I feel like I'm dealing with a negotiating. I'm doing nothing but negotiate. I'm a negotiator 24/7. My other one, she's going into high school and she wants to play a sport. My wife wants her in basketball because she plays basketball. So she signs her up for the basketball court. She's like, don't sign me up for basketball classes unless I want to go. So she goes in these summer courses and she's into basketball. And she comes home and says, I hate it. It's boring. I don't know if I want to play basketball. You're playing basketball. You know, and then you hear my wife going, she has to do a sport. She has to stay physical. She has to be doing something, especially as teenagers, which I highly agree with. And then you have the other one going, I don't want to play basketball. I'm going to be miserable. It's different from the town ball. I'm not as good as these other girls. These girls are in high school and they're animals. They're amazing. They're just so much better and I lost my confidence. I want to do something else. Well, you're not going to do something else. Well, why should you pick it? So it's like... And then they pull me aside, each one, and I got to hear each side, and I explain to the wife, and explain to my daughter. It's freaking exhausting.
World like raising teenage girls.
And plus, I got my mom, wait till you hear this story. Let me tell you something. You better set up for your elderly life. Because my mom lived at this place, right, for years. My dad and her, she couldn't take care of my dad anymore, so she went into independent living. I took my dad. He had dementia, and I spent many years being with him. He lived in our house, cleaning him, showering him, bathing him, accidents, taking him on trips. I eventually had to hire a nurse because and in the meantime, I would try to cover payment for my mom. I did cover payment for my mother, who's in independent living. So, whatever, that goes on for a couple years. Right before my dad passed away, my mom started getting sick. She started getting these crazy UTIs, urinary tract infection. It's like tripping on acid. It was horrible. It was Alzheimer's times 10. The facility she worked at, that she lived at, kept saying she's naked, she's screaming, people trying to murder her. So we're going through all the stuff trying to get her help, and she's in hospitals, in a mental hospital, and therapy, and it was brutal. And my wife has cancer. So it's just, it's a lot going on, right? So we take her in the house. Eventually we take my mom in the house. We're looking for care to help her because she wakes up 2 a.m. screaming there's a flood and we need to get the kids out. And she's getting knives. It was freaky. Her mind was lost. So I pulled her out of that other place, the independent living, and I lose it. I loved that place, and I was heartbroken. The people that ran it were just beautiful people, caretaking, beautiful people. From the front office down. Matter of fact, I used to talk to them saying, I want to get involved any way I can to help. This woman, Joan, that works there. And so after, I don't know, month, whatever amount of time, we realized my mom needs special care. We can't do this with 3 kids traveling. My wife was up in the middle of the night cleaning her every night. Not only up in the middle of the night cleaning her, bouncing back from cancer, she, you know, my mom would call her an asshole and a bitch and this and say horrible things to her. And so here she is taking care of my mother 2, 3 a.m. every night, cleaning her accidents, talking her back to sleep. My mom would call her this word and that word and that word. It was rough. So now time goes on. I call the place back. I said, is there any openings for my mom, but she's going to be in a different place? They said, you know what? Actually, she was in a rehab center. She was in some therapeutic or rehab for mentally ill. And I talked to this place and they said, you know what? We'll take her, but she's going to be in the dementia unit. Okay? Very horrible sight. My mom gets... They bring her into this dementia unit. Back to the original... She used to be in the same establishment. There's 2 buildings. There's independent living, and then there's the assisted living / dementia unit building. So they go, all right, we're going to put her in there. They put her in there. She gets tremendous help. Tremendous help. To the point where, and you know, I'd walk in there and people next to her are moaning. They're in a coma, but they keep people alive. Not them, just the families. You know, there's people in there that just, you go in a nursing home and someone's just sitting there for 9 hours like a plant. Just the only reason they're alive is because you're keeping them alive. There's no one visiting them. It's a horror show. And people are making money off that. Like $7,000 to $10,000 worth off a vegetable. My mom has given me so much inspiration. She fought back mentally and physically. She was in a wheelchair. She couldn't move. And mentally out of her mind. She fought her way back months and months and months. I don't know if it was a year later. And she fought her way back all the way to the point where she got out of the wackadoodle unit. I wrote her off. She was done. I was figuring out funeral plans. I had horrible thoughts. I understand Dr. Kevorkian. You can be as mad as you want for me saying that, but unless you lived that life, you have no right to chime in. No right to chime in. Zero. Well, I'm not saying what that guy did was right, but I understand if you want to take your life or helps an elderly get out of here when they're a vegetable. That is cruel. It's disturbing. It's wrong. Who's benefiting? You? Just your conscience keeping someone alive? At 95, that just stares at a wall, that can't even communicate, and their mind's been gone for 10 years. What kind of life is that? It's, I understand. So my point is, I understand Kevorkian. I get it. Unless you lived it, you don't dare. dare. You don't dare have a thought process to put your two cents in. Zero. None. So now my mom works her way out of being in this wacko unit to assisted living. She's in assisted living. She makes it out of her wheelchair months later, mentally brings herself back. And now she's in assisted living with a walker, talking to people, still mentally talking herself back. This is a woman that lost two children, two husbands. I've never seen anyone endure so much pain in my life when I look at my mom's life story. It's brutal. And yet, she's still fighting. And then scenarios like this happened. You ready for this one? You know, after a year or so there, I start to realize her funds are running low. Her funds went from $3,000 and change a month in that old building. So now in this new building, it's up to $7,000-$8,000 a month. $7,000-$8,000 a month. And it's just flushing down the toilet. But she's thriving. And, you know, the care is great and everyone's awesome. And I have a personal relationship with everyone there, the doctors, the nurse, the people, the front desk, everyone running the show. And there's this lovely woman there, Patty, comes up to me and she said, when's your mom? I understand. I think it's called Medicaid. Whenever your money runs out, you apply for Medicaid, Medicare. I don't know. I still don't know the freaking term. So I start applying for it. And I ask the facility, hey, my mom's running out of money. What do I do? And the people that work there, the Joan and that have been there forever and Patty, like, oh, we'll help you. Set up the company. Here's the company you call. And they gave me the company, and they always help us with everything else. And I went right to the company thanks to the people running the show there. So I did that. And Patty came to me, and she said, hey, Jim, when does it kick in? I said, hopefully right after the new year. She said, great, because we're saving your mother bed. We love your mother. Everyone loves her here. She's so funny. She keeps the place alive, blah, blah, blah. Great. Awesome. Now I found, you know, I kept finding, my mom's like a squirrel. She hid her money all over the place. So I kept finding extra funds while I'm going through the Medicare, which is a pain in the balls. How much money have you made in the last 5 years? We want to see every single ounce you've spent. And I get it. Their job is to make sure you didn't spend all your parents' money and hide it, which... thank God I had great accountants, and I never did. I'm honest, never took a penny, never took a half a penny. So I'm in the clear, I have nothing to worry about, zero. I have everything on file, here you go, here's what every check is worth, here's all the money she had, here's all the money, and here's all the checks. These checks were from my father's care, and you know, out of that it was turned into cash. I'm paying cash to this woman, Maria, that would take care of my dad, and this is where it all went to. Awesome. Great. Now, and I would go in there and give him a check. How's Medicaid? You know, it's going okay. Da-da-da-da-da. And I pay my check, and here's from my mom. We got all the way up until May of this year. And I get a letter. It says, hey, man, your mom's out of here. You got 30 days to find her. We don't have a Medicare bed for her. And I got to say, the first thing that really... I get business. I get it. You send a letter. But we've all known each other personally. I go in there all the time. And the person that sent to me, she eventually said, we've met. Well, if we met, then you know who I am. And you know, I come in there. And you know, I leave my cell phone with everyone. And you know, everyone knows my email. To send just a cold letter about your mother. Yeah, you need to find a place for your mother. We don't have a Medicaid bed. If you don't get, you got to find a place for her. That is such a cold, malice approach. It's cold and it's malice. I don't care what anyone says. You present that to anyone. I don't care if you're a business person. We're not talking about a loaf of bread. You're talking about a human that's going on 90, that's blind in an eye. You're talking about someone that has the will to live. And you're running a business, and your business, I'm a customer. Well, my mother's a customer. And I was a customer. My mom is the customer. And so I went in there. I was pissed, man. I called her cold-hearted and cold-blooded because that's how I felt. And when I went there, I said, you know, you send a letter. Well, and the letter was like, we've attempted many times and you refuse. I was so pissed. You know how much mail I get? I don't look at, I'm still looking at mail things. I travel. My wife had cancer twice. You think I give a crap about what's coming in the mail? I was out of work for months so I can be home with that and be with my mom, be with everything else with my kids. Watching her with chemo and freaking bumps on her face looking like an alien. Trying to keep her spirits alive. Trying to keep my mom's spirits alive. Thinking my daughter, my wife's going to die. Mom, it's okay. Oh, she dies and you're going to lose your life. And those kids, we're going to be okay. This woman sends me a letter. Hey, 30 days. That's what business is? You know, I don't get into politics, but you know what? Sometimes, you know, I get capitalism and all that, but sometimes if money is the god, if just money and numbers is the god, that god has no boundaries and could care less about anything. No emotion, it'll kill, it'll steal, it can care, it's emotionless. There's no heart, there's no soul, there's no heartbeat. That's the only crappy thing about it. That's the dark side of business, and it's dark. So I went in there, I was pissed. I called her, I said, you're cold-hearted. I'm not cold-hearted, I took care of my... You took care of... I'd like to see how you define taking care of. Did you wipe ass? Did you hold someone till they were dead in their last breath? Are you there when they were bleeding out? What do you define taking care of? Is your definition just throwing them in a home and you get to work at it and deal with numbers? Is that taking care of? I don't know how you define taking care of. So I go there, emotional wreck. We eventually talk, hash things out. Oh, we don't have a bed and... We're new, and we fired that person that told you that. We fired Patty. And we don't care what this one did and whatever. And she lied to my face. She said, I called you. I said, show me. You never called me. I know that for a fact. Because I pick up every phone call from that place where my mom stays. Because I don't know if that's the death call. I wait every day for the death call. Hi, baby. My kids just came home. So I wait every day for the death call. And my wife's pissed now because I gave my daughter green light. So I'm trying to emotionally talk to you and she's going to come up here and yell at me. Being a family guy is not easy, bro. It's not easy. I wouldn't trade in for the world. It's just not easy. It's easy. It's tougher than everyone thinks. So with that said, she's like, well, how much money do you have? And I said, you know what? I'm going to look and see... you know, maybe there's money that I can pay up until, I don't know, August, September, October. I don't know. I'd have to look at it. Now there's a lawyer, and I go to the lawyer. All this woman cares about. And by the way, here's the golden nugget. Here's the golden nugget. When I moved into that place, when I moved my mom into that place, when they accepted her because of their goodwill to take care of humans, I didn't get a contract. I didn't get a contract. And at the end of the day, even though they fired the lady, her attitude, we fired her. It's not you. Well, too bad. Not a problem. Should have got it in writing. Who gets those things in writing? What kind of attitude is that? What kind of attitude is that? What kind of human are you? What kind of human are you? You should have got it in writing, what the Patty said. You should have gotten writing what you were planning to do with my mother. And you should have presented it to me. And you should have explained, hey, I understand you've been looking through this. We're the new owners, by the way. And I just want to let you know there's been a lot of things changing and you have to look at this contract and blah, blah, blah. They sent that. We sent it to you. They sent it after they knew all the money was gone. So I'm going through that whole thing. What am I doing with it? What am I doing with this? How am I going to? If I move my mom out of there and now she ends up in a nursing home, or then I'm going to kill her will to live. She worked this hard in her life to get here. And now this woman, because they dropped the ball, for business reasons, she dropped the ball. Not me. I would have never put my mother in a situation if I knew she wouldn't be able to stay when her money ran out and they wouldn't take the Medicare. No one explained to me you get a certain amount of beds. No one explained to me, like, well, here's how it goes and you're on a waiting list. That was never, ever, ever explained to me. So I'm dealing with that while trying to rock and trying to be a parent and still rooting for my Mets. So we keep striving along. It's all good. I wanted to talk to you about. So next week, I want to do a really cool show. I got an offer to do a radio show. Big, big radio show. Can't really talk about it, but it's a big question mark. Just where I'm at in life. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, life keeps moving on. I didn't want to leave you empty handed. I wanted to let you know on my personal side where Jim Brewer's at. Where's Jim Brewer at? This is where I'm at. I gotta say, War Pigs by Sabbath taught me so much, more than any history book, more than anything, about politics and war. So much. That one song.
Well, these people are evil. Do get rid of them. They're dark.
Now I know why.
Put an advisory on this.
Now I know why they did that. When you listen to lyrics of War Pigs by Black Sabbath, Leper Messiah taught me so much. Not about faith, but about establishments that put God on their front door and say, we're all about God. Leper Messiah by Metallica taught me so much about that, the whole God front. Powerful stuff, and I thank God for music, because that's always the real teacher for me. Hope you had fun, man. I will be with you guys next week. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go running. I'm in my toilet right now because wife and two kids came home and I'm probably going to get in the middle of something. Let's rock on, shall we? Have a good one, guys. Thanks for listening.